listening to another episode of Beckett's Babies, a playwriting podcast. Every week we discuss plays we love, interview theater artists, and share our thoughts on playwriting and theater. We're your hosts, Sam Collier
and Sarah Cho, and today's episode is a little bit of a hybrid. We're going to be discussing the play Kim's Convenience, as well as a topic of adaptation. This play, Kim's Convenience, started as a theater play, and then which was adapted into a TV show. And so we just kind of wanted to talk about the play itself and then compare and contrast about what we thought about the play version and the TV version of the play. Kim's Convenience. It's a very funny comedy. It's about a Korean family. Mr. Kim, the father, he owns and runs his own business. And he hopes that, you know, it'll provide a secure future for his daughter. But his daughter, Janet, is not interested in taking over the store. She wants to be a photographer. And so the story is about the father wanting to sort of pass this store down to his daughter. The daughter has no interest, while the world around outside this convenience store, their neighborhood is being developed into Walmart or like a competitor is being built nearby. And so it's this question of, will this convenience store survive? And we have the story of like his son that he sort of stopped talking to. We don't know how many years, for a while. And they, is this kind of a will he not take over the store to keep the family history.
And it's Canadian.
It's Canadian.
Canada. Is this your first Canadian play?
I think so. Yeah. Yeah, it's a Canadian. Yeah, I thought that was so funny about. Yeah, I mean, we'll get into that a little bit more. But yeah, it's a Canadian play. It's an Asian Canadian play.
Yeah.
Yeah. A little bit of background, the play premiered in 2011 Toronto Fringe Festival, where it sold out in every show. It was awarded Best New Play. The production was then invited to open at Seoul Pepper Theater's 2012-2013 season, winning Toronto Theater Critics Awards for Best Canadian Play and Best Actor for Paul Sun-Hyung Lee. Yeah, so let's get into the play. What did you notice? What did you like about the play?
I really liked it. And I was saying to you earlier, I think it's because I've been reading so many heavy things lately, like just very serious, slow, heavy things, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, poetry? Poetry?
Too much poetry. Yeah, National Poetry Month is over, so time to move on. And this was just so light and funny. I mean, there were definitely, you know, some serious themes, but... Yeah, I really noticed the humor and the short snippets of scenes. In fact, it already felt very TV-like in its play form, I think, because the scenes were so short.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of funny – yeah, when you say those snippets, I was, like, thinking a lot of, like, moments of jokes that it kind of, like, has its own moment and they kind of move on, like, almost like sketch comedy. And I was just like thinking of the language, like, you know, there's some of it was written in Korean. And then so obviously you got the translation. But I was all but I could read a little Korean. So I was like reading the Korean part as I was. So I was like thinking, you know, whoever wants to read those Korean dialogue obviously needs to know Korean. And learning that, I thought that was interesting. I don't think I've ever saw Korean language on page.
Really? Like in a play?
I don't think so. Like I've seen other languages being written, but I guess this is my first time, like, because this was a Korean play that I saw it. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. I've never seen it like this.
What do you think it added to the play? If it did add anything, what do you think it – how did it change the story for you?
I don't think it changed much for me. Because I always kind of go back when I write a play about, you know, a Korean family, and I honestly keep thinking about oh, you know, how is this going to be read? Or it's always, I'm always battling like, okay, Korean American family, but just like, translation might be a little difficult, or like, I don't know who's going to read it or whatever. So there's like a really thick accent. You know, how do I write in a very like the language of a thick accent Korean immigrant? You know, it's like I'm always kind of going back and forth. And I mean, personally for me, like I have a just basic knowledge of Korean. Like I could read and write like a little bit, but it's not like expert level. They call it like kitchen sink, like kind of kitchen table talk. You know, like
cool.
And so, like, I have a basic knowledge just because of my grandma. But I just – I always go back and forth on that, like, writing Korean or not. I guess it's, yeah. I'm always constantly thinking about accessibility. Yeah, so that was my kind of initial impression when I first saw that. And I just love the dad. Like,
he's the best character.
I kept thinking about Uncle Phil from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Like, I just thought about him when I was reading this play, that character, because I was just like, here's, like, that's a play about, you know, a black father, uncle, kind of he's affluent and, you know. But then I just kind of thought about, like, this other I don't know. So something about that, the comparison I was trying to make was just that here was this like a lead male that is just kind of more full of life than like he's not just a side character and kind of has more life to him.
Yeah. And just kind of baffled by his children.
Yeah. I really love the moment in the play where they talked about, which I think was an inspiration from the playwright, but like he has a family member owned a store in Los Angeles, there was like a LA riots. He thought the owner or his uncle or like, I don't know who, but thought the store was going to go under because of the riots and get attacked. So he had his gun ready, but he saw that people from the community were protecting him, like protecting the store, yeah, or not touching it because of just how he took care of the community. So I thought that was like a little bit like a history, because it's a Canadian play, but I was like, that is such a specific LA or American moment, you know, that in a Korean American experience, that I felt like it was drawing into this Canadian play, which I thought that was just interesting. I was like, huh.
Yeah, I really liked that moment also.
Mm-hmm.
Another of my favorite moments was when he's talking to his son, and he's saying, you know, I had all these hopes and dreams for you. You have all these hopes and dreams for your baby becoming a star hockey player, I guess. But, you know, it's okay if he doesn't become that. And kind of by extension, he was saying it's okay that you're not, you know, who I thought you would be.
yeah. My other favorite scene is the daughter when, like, I worked all these X number of hours for you. This is how much you owe me. And the father is like, and then she's like, here's a number. Like, this is what you owe me. Like, $100,000.
Yeah, it's like $100,000.
and he's all like, and then he was like, okay, then what about your piano lessons, or like, what about your this lessons? What about this? X, Y, Z. And she starts deducting, subtracting from the amount. It's like, okay, enough. This is enough. Like, you know, yeah. I mean, that is such, like, oh my gosh, that is such a, I don't know if it's like an immigrant or a Korean, but this play, it was Korean to the max, like about money and about religion and like that relationship with the parent and the kid, especially the immigrant, if it's immigrant parents. I was like, this is so, it was so biographical. like, that's, I had to really work cool. in my parents' store growing up. Yeah. Like, I had to work, and like, how, you know, I'm like, I want to go out and do my own thing, but I'm kind of trapped here. So,
yeah.
Yeah. And the parents always play that card. They play that card of like, look how much we paid for all the things for you to invest in you. And I'm like, yeah, you did, but I'm also stuck here, so you're not letting me go out. It's always this like constant battle. Okay, so do you have any other thoughts before we move on to the TV adaptation version?
No, I think we pretty much covered it.
Okay, cool.
I just thought it was so fun to read. So funny.
Yeah. All right. So you watched two episodes.
I did. Episodes. I couldn't stop.
All right. So what did you like or what did you notice about the TV version?
Well, first off, I'll say it really matched the play in terms of tone, and these characters felt immediately familiar. I mean, I had just finished reading the play, but I thought that it captured what I had been imagining in my own mind exactly. So that was really cool, just to see it come to life. And then there were moments where I was like, oh, yeah, they're Canadian. And it's hard to kind of put my finger on exactly what those moments were, but they felt Canadian. A little bit not quite familiar, like a little bit foreign.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, maybe the way the people coming into the store would just make little references. And I was like, oh, yeah, we're in Canada.
Canada.
But then the biggest difference I noticed right away was that the daughter, Janet, was 20 rather than 30, which I thought was a really interesting choice. Because it's in the play, you know, if a daughter is 30 and unmarried,
mm-hmm.
and her parents are like getting a little bit worried about that, that's like a different kind of story than if she's 20 and they're worried that she doesn't have a boyfriend yet. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's too. And then before recording, to provide context, like when this play got picked up to be a TV show, the playwright Ince Troy and the other creator that he partnered up with, Kevin White. Funny story, I was like reading the interview, or Ince Troy was like, Kevin White is like the most whitest guy ever. Even his name is White. Like, you know, like, I thought that was just a funny, like, his first impression. But Instro is partnered up with Kevin White, and Kevin White brought up the question of, you know, in this moment where it takes place in the play, what if for the TV show it was like 10 years prior? Like, what was happening with the family? And I thought that was such an interesting way to approach to make into a TV. Because obviously for TV, I'm sure they're like thinking about longevity, like the years. But I was like, so the things I noticed that they pulled from the play into that pilot was like and you screenshot this and send it to me, but like who's gay, you know, like, or what kind of gay person steals, like who would steal, which gay would steal, or something like that, the kind of comparison or the type of person that would steal. And then there was a joke in there about a gay person, there's two lesbians, they cancel each other out, like they can't
steal. One lesbian will steal, but two lesbians
cancel each other out. But I felt like it's like they were inspired by that, and then they did a whole like a running gag of like gay discount on this episode.
Like, and they just like deciding who's gay, who's gay.
Yeah, like you're not gay, like you're gay. And then like, yeah, so I just thought that was like it felt like the play, they treated the play like an inspirational book or a playbook or something, but they just sort of pulled things to be inspired by, and obviously it was like to create another whole world in some way.
I love that so much. Yeah. So I'm wondering if there are, I'm definitely going to keep watching the show. And I'm wondering, you know, if there are other episodes that take like a little kernel from one of the scenes in the play and make it into a whole episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely for sure. All the characters' relationship, you know, the father, the mother, the daughter, the son, all four of them, like, that stay the same. It kind of like how they all feel about each other. Although the play, I never got a sense of the sister and the brother were talking to each other. Like, they were talking. And that, and then in the show version, it's like they were still friends. Like, because she would come over to see him. Like, hey, can you help me get a car? You know, dad's bugging me.
Right.
So that was like that was an interesting change of like, that's like and at some point are they planning that they lose touch? Like, out of, you know, they stop talking to each other.
Interesting.
Yeah. That's one thing I noticed.
I also thought they added a lot more about the mom and her like church community, which I really loved, and how, you know, she feels all this social pressure about her children not being as successful as the children of the other people in her church community. And, so it was really great to see her character get more time and attention in the show.
Yeah. Oh my God. This makes me think of, I'll just tell you. Okay. So my mom bought a Chinese Vietnamese restaurant and she bought from this Korean guy and he sold it to her kind of like, I don't know. He was kind of like trying to overprice this business or whatever. I don't know. But my mom was able to like, you know, get a good deal and, you know, bought the restaurant. And in the same city, in the same town, you know, he's Korean. My mom's Korean. We all go to the same Korean church. And then he started own business. It was like a convenience store, ironically. But he's like start making rumors at the church about my mom, like about my mom's business, like about like, oh, because he, you know, he had previously owned it and he was like, oh, you don't want to go there. So much MSG, so much MSG.
Oh my
and
like, God.
Like something like that. And then
after he sold it to her, was he like jealous of how well the restaurant was doing or something?
Yeah. Cause my mom was like, she really pulled her sleeve and just like really worked hard to like, you know, make it good. And she even brought in like new dishes to the menu and it was getting a little popular. So she was like working really hard. But this guy was like making rumors at the church. And then so like people from a church, and you know, a lot of the, you know, Korean church community, like they want to help each other, you know, so they're like, a lot of Koreans would come to the restaurant and eat, you know, and my mom would be so grateful for that. And then all of a sudden, they just stopped showing up.
Oh my God.
It was like the most dramatic, like over dramatic thing. But I just like when you talked about the Korean community, the church, I was like thought about that because of the like, it's also just like this competitiveness that I just never understood with Koreans. But yeah, it just like made me think of that. But
And just like the social,
yeah.
Pressure.
Yeah. I just remember like, I was like, don't drag me into this. Like, I don't care about this.
How old are you?
I think I was 17, I think. Yeah, 16, 17. At that point, I'm like, I just want to apply to college. I want to get the hell out. I don't care. But yeah, I just remember like, it was such a turmoil for my mom and just like the whole family because they were like trying to figure out, okay, so we lost some members, or like we have lost some customers, we need to make more, brainstorm right now, how do we get more people? And I'm like, well, maybe we could start selling dessert, we don't have dessert. And my mom's like, no, this is too much. And then it's like all the kids trying to like figure it out. Yeah, so
that's so mean of that guy.
I know, and he still has his store, but my mom moved on.
I also really liked, another thing I loved in the play was how the dad would quiz people about like important Korean dates.
Yes.
Or was it like Korea's proudest moment
like Independence Day or something like that. And I love about that character's like attribute, personality trait, and then brought that into the TV show when it was like, it was short, but at the end when Janet goes on a date with a Korean guy that the mom had tried to set up. And then he was like, what's the Korean Independence Day? You know, like, and he says the answer. He's like, okay, good job. Goodbye. You know, have a good night, you know? And then the daughter was like, I told you he was going to ask that. Like, you know, prepping him. Yeah. But I just love that the characters' personalities and what made them so funny and unique that they brought into the show.
Yeah, me too.
I had such mixed feelings about, even though, so the actors who played the mom and the dad were the same, but for some reason, I thought the mom in the TV version was just so over the top. I don't know. Like, she was like, this whole setting up the daughter with the different Koreans, like a job interview style, like all of that, like it was like, I didn't have that impression that she was that kind of mom in the play version.
So you felt like she was written differently?
Yeah, maybe just a little bit. Like, I thought she was just so like almost stereotypical Asian mom, like Korean mom, in a way that was like almost like they were on the edge of that. You know, anymore, and I was like, wow, we're getting to that stereotype.
But, it's like too much.
A little too much. Like, the father had a really great running gag of like, get discount, you know, and then it was just like such a funny thing. And it's like they were trying to figure out what to give to the mom, that similar joke, but this of like, but this like putting the pressure on the daughter, and then like this whole like interview style, like I was like, it just felt a little out of place for some reason for me.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Because I mean, I think
wonder. Yeah. I feel like in the play, the mom is not as much of a character. Like, she's just kind of in the background. And so I wonder if in bringing her to the forefront more and just kind of fleshing her out as a character, they just went in the direction of making her more, I don't know, just like hamming her up more.
Yeah. I could see that.
Rather than filling in more information about her. Who she is or her background. I don't know.
I feel like for this play or the TV version, like every sitcom, I just feel like they have there's like opposing characters of kind of over the top, kind of like out there character, and then like more grounded characters. And I have kind of felt like they may try to make the parents that like that over the top, kind of funny, bigger than life sort of characters. And then the kids to be more like sort of grounded and to be that opposition.
That's interesting.
And yeah, so I kind of wonder if they, in doing that, they're trying to think of like the mom. How do we make her equally that over the top, larger than life type character, like the dad in a way?
Yeah.
I mean, they're all really grounded still, but I think they were trying to figure that. But it's just like, yeah, I was like, I don't know, the picking this as her like, target of her daughter must find a person, like cannot be single, was like the right choice, but I don't know.
Well, especially because she's 20. I mean, and she's like in college, and I definitely see your point. Well, I wonder if, did you want to make any predictions about, I know you've watched a few episodes of the show, but
which I kind of forgot already, but I watched.
Where do you think it will go? Because isn't it 4 or 5 seasons?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think it was like 5 seasons and they canceled. Okay, so in the pilot, right? Pilot is like you're just setting up where all the relationship, you kind of want to see the relationship go. Mm-hmm. Like we know the father has like a not so good relationship with his son. We know the father's relationship with the wife, kind of like they seem to butt heads about when it comes to raising the kids sometimes. But they like obviously love each other. And the father's relationship with the daughter obviously has like cannot get on the same page with the dad. They just don't see eye to eye. And then the mother's relationship with the son, like they still have the relationship. They talk to each other, and then the daughter, she's starting to support. and then the sun. So I'm just like thinking like in this blueprint, like I kind of seeing, at least for the first season, the big question of will the father and the son talk to each other? Like will they reconnect or not? That's like a big thing. I could see the show trying to answer that question or not. And then I still don't know if it's the right choice, but like will the mother succeed in finding a boyfriend or a person for the daughter? Mm-hmm. Or will she kind of accept her as who she is and like being a photographer or whatever?
Yeah, because I also want to know more about the mom and what her own interests mm-hmm. are, you know, beyond just what she wants for her children.
Yeah. In the play version, there was this, you know, this outside force of a Walmart being built nearby.
Yeah.
So I kind of wondered if like they're going to start bringing that. I thought they were bringing in the first in the pilot, but I kind of remember him saying something about the city, like the town, I mean, with gay pride. This was all happening, like how much the town has changed.
Yeah. He's like, where did all these gay people come from?
Come from, yeah. And so I wonder if that was like alluding to like the town and then this outside force, this competing mm-hmm. antagonist that's going to come in later. But that was just sort of setting up. But then, so that's kind of the three things, I guess. Is like,
yeah, because in the play, his friend offers to buy the store. And right. That's the big question.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And then, there was that other Asian guy.
Yeah.
I forgot his name. I don't know if that was Mr. Lee. I don't know. But he came into the store and he was like talking to the dad and about his store and stuff. So there's another character there. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I guess that's. Do you have predictions or like where would you like to see the show go?
I want to know more about. So in the second episode, there's mm-hmm. more about the daughter's, Janet's photography and her. Mm-hmm. Kind of growing artistic interest and skill. And so I just want to know more about that and see where that goes. Mm-hmm. It's really funny because the dad has all these pictures he's taken like as a hobby. He's taken all these pictures of trees and he's trying to impress Janet's friends from school with his pictures and they're like, that's not that good. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I was just really interested in her art.
Mm. Do you think – okay, so I just watched this movie last night, but right before I went to bed, like called The Mitchell versus the Machines. It's like an animated movie on Netflix.
Okay.
And that movie is about – it's really out there. I don't know. I thought it was such an insane, distracting movie. But but in that is about a father-daughter relationship. Mm-hmm. Like the father not understanding the daughter and the daughter wanting to be understood by the father. Like, do you think that is, like, I don't know, overused trope or something, like, I don't know, of a story? Or do you think that's actually, like, I mean, if it's a trope for a story, it's probably true for some reason, but.
It is very common.
Common, yeah. I just like – I saw that movie and I was like –
Do you think there are more father-daughter stories than there are father-son – I mean, there are a lot of father-son stories.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's the most common. And then father-daughter and then mother-daughter.
Mm.
But what about – there aren't that many mother-son stories, are there?
I don't think so. I mean, I can't think of
– That's like the least –
Yeah.
I think we're just – it's because we live in a patriarchal society. And so,
well,
there's always got to be like,
I'm thinking of like maybe British shows. There's like a lot of books. Because the Queen. But yeah, I don't know. I was just thinking about all that and how those tropes seems to be like so common and just, I don't know. I felt it. Watching that movie last night, I was like, man, this feels so like, overdone. I don't want to see any more father-daughter stories anymore.
What would you like to see instead?
I don't know. I don't know if it's gonna be father daughter story. This whole like misunderstood one part is like, I don't know. I kind of don't want to see that anymore.
Yeah. Like, all right, folks. Well, you heard it here first. Stop writing those stories. Think of something
you
new.
You know what people are going to do? They're like, when you tell them not to do something, they'll do even more. So, I'm going to see it like just.
What about like, grandfather, granddaughter story?
Oh, I love it. I want that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a cute one.
Oh, my gosh. I'm so distracted right now because an 8-week-old puppy, I think, is walking by my window. I think he's about 8 weeks. He's so tiny.
Gosh, tiny puppies.
Okay, I'm back.
All right. So, listeners, if you have a chance to see the show or read the play, let us know what you thought about the adaptation, or just like an adaptation in general. Like, I'm so curious to hear what your thoughts are.
Yeah.
Because I know there are people who are just like, I love adaptations. I only do adaptations. I only write adaptations.
Really? Are there people like that?
I don't think so. I mean, it is – I feel like it is a way to make money in just in
what
general.
Do you think about TV and movies like only looking for pre-existing stories like novels and plays rather than just coming up with a new idea?
I mean, it's the most annoying thing. But it's like they're obviously – they don't want to spend millions of dollars on like a brand new ideas and stories. I mean, they can, but like they don't want to. So they're like, I'd rather invest in a built-in audience that we know that could work. I mean, that's how I felt like it looked and seemed that way.
I never thought about it as a built-in audience, but that makes so much sense.
And it's like vertical integration. Like, so they're like, we have the book. We know there's an audience. We can make the TV show and the movie. We'll know the audience will go from there.
We know the story is successful.
Story
is
successful.
Take a risk, people. You're the industry that has all the money.
I know.
God, why are you coming on playwrights to take all the risks?
Yeah. And it's giving all those like novelists and writers who are probably, you know, almost near death and living on the street. Like a hope of having a home. But it's just, yeah. It's just like it. That's why like it's just crazy how many books get optioned and then just and I've heard writers wrote a book, got optioned, and nothing happens to it. They're just like, nothing happens to it. They just
it was dangled in front of them.
Exactly. And then they're just like, it's not being made into anything, but you know, it's under a contract. Like no one could touch this except this one studio or this one production company or whatever until they have the time to get to it or they feel like it's the right moment. But it's just like sometimes you have a piece of original work that just sort of gets stuck and then
that
shelved.
Doesn't seem right.
No, it's horrible.
They should at least pay a kill fee or something to be like,
I know.
We kept you in limbo for 5 years and now we're not going to do it.
Oh God, I follow so many like musical artists that like they all share the similar story, especially in the 90s for some reason. There were all these like engines of like artists doing similar type of pop music because they were getting hits, you know, and then they were just like studio taking that album and not promoting it or anything or doing anything with it, but they just wanted to have it. And then these artists, they can't go on tour, they can't like sing that song because it's like owned, like it's so crazy. Like so yeah, it's a vicious world of money grubbing companies. But yeah, that's why like graphic novels, all those action movies, all the Marvel movies, TV shows, all it's yeah. Crazy.
I don't think I've seen any of those Marvel movies.
Oh God!
Is Black Panther Marvel?
Yes,
I think that's the only one I saw.
Oh, okay. I mean, that's a good one. But the whole universe. I mean, like, I was really into the universe, like from 2000 to 2010, and then you know, something happened to me that I feel like a lot of people don't do is grow up. I grew up, you guys. Like, I got over it.
Oh, good job, Sarah.
But yeah, I mean, like, whatever.
You grew up in 2010. Were you 20?
I think so. Yeah, I was 20. Yeah. Actually, that's such a lie, because then in my early 20s, I was still liking. I was trying to get catching up to the new.
What do you think is the best Marvel movie?
Ooh. Honestly, I just love X-Men.
All right, I'll watch that one. And then that'll be
enough. Even like the 2000, like the first, I love X-Men. I think I love just this like team, like this like all individually different unique powers, different people. They don't know what they think it's their weakness or their flaw, but they sort of like find a community with Professor Xavier, and then like team fighting together. Like, I kind of like love it. I've always loved even the cartoon from like the 90s. Like, I don't know what it was. I even loved it. I love X-Men is probably just like will always have a place in my heart. And then, oh my gosh, Logan, X-Men. It was basically Hugh Jackman retiring as Wolverine, which was the saddest thing ever to watch, but it was so beautiful. And I was like, this is the, yeah, I think that's the movie that closed my chapter. I was like, I don't think I can ever watch graphic novel movies anymore, or wow, Marvel movies, because I was like, he closed that chapter in my life.
So really, like, you didn't grow up, you just had your heart broken.
That's part of growing up. All right, let's move on to Glistens.
All right, you go first.
Okay. So, topic of food, I guess. There's this Portuguese Filipino bakery that opened up three blocks from where we live, and oh my god, it is so good. I had this like butter cheese brioche, like melted cheese on top, so like salty and sweet. Oh, and warm, and it was like melting in my mouth when I took a bite. And then they had horchatas. I had the matcha horchata. It was so good. I'm gonna try their strawberry. Like, I'm like so happy. But also, it's our little like exercise walking route. You know, we just like take that walk. So we're gonna stop by, and every time we go for a walk, we're gonna stop there because it's so good.
That sounds so nice.
And they have like these thick cookies, like thick, dense, soft cookies. That's like their award-winning.
What's the best kind of cookie?
Oh, I know, so good.
What's the best flavor?
I just like the chocolate chip cookie. Just so I love. I just like love when the chocolate chip cookie is just packed with chocolate and then like butter, and just like that's it. So yeah, we actually have to record. We might go there.
I think you have to. You're dreaming about it.
Yeah. All right. What's your glisten?
Well, on the same theme, my glisten is this donut shop here in Belfast called The Only Donut. And they make donuts out of potatoes. Have I talked about this before? It's like there's a kind of donut recipe that's maybe very traditional where you use potatoes. And it makes like a very rich, dense kind of donut. And I've never been a donut person. Like, I don't like Krispy Kreme donuts. Like, I've never liked donuts, but I really like these donuts.
I'm trying to think of a comparison. Like, what?
Oh, you mean with the potatoes?
Yeah, like the texture? Like, what's it like?
It's like, it's more cakey, I think, than
cakey.
It's like,
but not as chewy. It's still.
Well, I guess I haven't eaten a lot of donuts in my life because I don't usually like them. But I think of a traditional donut as being maybe like a lighter texture, and these are more substantial.
Yeah. Because there's like the yeast raised donut. And then there's like the cake, when you describe like the cake donut, which is really dense.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of, when you mention potato, like I kind of imagine like, I don't want to say mochi, but something more like chewier than a cake.
Oh yeah, it's not so much chewy though. It's not like mochi.
Yeah.
But it does feel like it has more substance to it.
Mm. I bet they could make it like a savory too.
Oh, yeah. They have so many flavors. I'll see if they have any savory ones the next time I go. They had one called Sea Smoke that I had a couple months ago. That was like, it was like a chocolate donut. And then it had, I think, like a coffee frosting.
Oh, and then God, that sounds so good.
Like smoked, like hickory smoked sea salt sprinkled on it. So good.
This is
but
amazing.
I mean, it felt like I was eating a piece of cake. Yeah, it was not a breakfast item.
I kind of am like thinking like they probably took the potato and then that was their base and they started like adding the flour to the potato and the sugar and all the flavor. Wow. Because I like making like a potato pancake. Like if I take leftover mashed potatoes for breakfast the next day, I'll make potato pancakes. Okay. I'm hungry. Listeners, are you hungry? All right. That's it for our show. Thanks so much for listening. Let us know what your thoughts are. And if you have a favorite bakery chef.
Don't forget to like and share and review our episodes.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Goodbye.
Bye. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Beckett's Babies. If you enjoyed what you heard or learned a thing or two about playwriting, be sure to like, subscribe, and share the podcast with your friends.
And if you'd like to reach out and share with us your thoughts on playwriting and theater, or maybe be a guest on the show, be sure to visit our website at www.beckettsbabies.com. That's www.beckettsbabies.com, and you can contact us there. Thanks for listening.